Of Cherbourg is Jacques Demy's 1964 French Technicolor musical starring the impossibly gorgeous Catherine Deneuve and Nino Castellanovo as a young couple head over heels in love. She works in an umbrella store owned by her mother. He works in a gas station while taking care of his invalid godmother. Despite their relative financial hardships, Genevieve and Guy are happy. That is, until Guy is drafted to serve in the French army in the war against Algeria. And after their first and only night together, Genevieve finds herself pregnant. She longs for Guy to return, but letters from him are few and far between. Meanwhile, Genevieve's mother, Emery, tries to pair her off with a more suitable, upwardly mobile man named Roland, played by Marc Michel. Will this couple survive? Should they? That is the general conceit of The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. This was a movie that many people have compared to La La Land, compared with La La Land, because it is apparently that film's director, Damien Chazelle's, this is his favorite film. So a bunch of podcasts have been pairing these two films together, because if you enjoyed La La Land, you probably will enjoy Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and vice versa. And I had never seen Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and we figured this was the perfect opportunity to talk about it. And, of course, Luke is back, because Luke and I enjoy talking about La La Land so much, and we just want to kind of live in that world a little more. So this is the first thing I'm hearing about it. Luke, what was your reaction to Umbrellas of Cherbourg?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a beautiful film. Great music, too. Really wonderful music.
Yes, it's very funny that a character very early on in the movie says, "I don't like opera. Movies movies are better." And, of course, this film is an opera because every single line of dialogue is sung. Down to the most mundane, do you want leaded or unleaded gas? That's sung. Every single line of dialogue is sung in this movie. It's really remarkable. So, I knew it was going to be a pretty remarkable experience because this film is considered a classic, and it didn't disappoint really. So, in terms of the relationship, I mean, this is a very different film than La La Land in every respect in terms of what it's about and its concerns. But I mean, what were your thoughts about this couple, about whether they should? How torn up were you when they sort of don't make it the rest of the movie?
Boy, you know, that's a good question. I felt while watching it, you know, their love reminded me of a young Romeo and Juliet, that it's very youthful and very passionate, not necessarily, you know, hasn't really been tested by the fires of time yet. So I felt sad, but not surprised when they didn't make it. It did kind of bring me to similar levels of sadness though, at the end when they finally meet up again together and they kind of share that experience of, you know, looking back and at the gas station that's been, you know, built by, Guy. So yeah, I felt sad, but at the same time, there felt like a little bit more of just a reckless youth to their love that it didn't really surprise me that it didn't work out. Especially, I think too, having seen La La Land first and felt like maybe this would be in store for this couple too. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we didn't get around to talking about during La La Land was the color palette. We really just sort of didn't get around, and that's more my
right.
fault. I just sort of forgot about it.
I had wanted to talk about it too, and Russell, I think it was Russell Burbage that mentioned it on the comments section of the Fire and Water page for the episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a big miss to not talk about the color.
Yeah, I mean, the colors are bright and candy colors, and that's what this movie is. And even though this movie takes place in, it's said that it's a coastal town of Cherbourg, it's not, you don't get the sense it's a particularly wealthy neighborhood. I mean, Genevieve and her mom talk about how there's very little money to be had. Hard to believe that a store that just sells umbrellas isn't, you know, flush with cash. But you got to expand a little. Come on. But yeah, I mean, I love the colors in this movie are unbelievable. I mean, they were just like solid walls painted magenta or lime green and sort of and her Genevieve's coat is these solid colors. It reminded me a lot of Dick Tracy, which we talked about on this show many episodes back. But the splashes of color in this movie are really pretty remarkable. And then when there's a moment where somebody like this other character comes in, Michelle, the diamond merchant, who Emery, Genevieve's mom, wants to marry her off to, he is in all black. And the car that he drives is in all black. Now, that doesn't mean he's a bad guy, but it's you know, he's kind of coming in from a different universe than the universe that these characters live in. Because, I mean, the opening song, I Will Wait For You song, and they sing that, and it's these two are so in love, it's absurd. I mean, they're just the lovingest love any lovers have ever loved. You know, I mean, it's as you said, it's the love of two 19-year-olds that just the entire universe is wrapped up in each other. And of course, a 19-year-old Catherine Deneuve, you completely buy that.
Yeah, the colors are gorgeous in this movie. It was interesting to me too. You know, the very first scene with it's this top-down view of the street, and it's raining, and you're watching people pass by. As they're holding umbrellas over them, so all you see is the shape of the umbrella, and it's one colored umbrella after another after another after another. And the first time the song, at least in my viewing, I think this is true, the first time the song hits kind of a minor chord, a black umbrella crosses the path of the screen, and it does so not in a crisscross pattern. All the umbrellas up to this point are passing either vertically or horizontally, perpendicular to each other. At this moment, there's the first chord that hits kind of a minor chord, a black umbrella appears, and it crosses diagonally across the screen.
Huh.
At least that's what I, you know, if my memory was right when that moment happened, and I thought, oh, well, that's really interesting. Just that blackness would cross in that way. And that's the last set of umbrellas in that scene too is just a straight line of black across the screen, which I thought was interesting too.
Hmm.
Yeah. It made me wonder if they were trying to tell any bit of the story through the ways that the umbrellas were crossing there, or at least do some kind of foreshadowing. But yeah, that was something that jumped out at me when I was watching it.
Jeez, I did not even notice. I mean, I know nothing about music. So, I mean, I now know what thank you. I now know what a minor chord is, just for having done 36 episodes of Pod Dylan, but generally I don't know much about music. But, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting how films kind of double back on themselves, because, I mean, this La La Land was inspired by Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and Umbrellas of Cherbourg was inspired by MGM movie musicals. So you've got American musicals inspiring a French musical, which then in turn inspires an American musical. And,
that's great.
You know, the La La Land has very different concerns than this film. And one of the ways I think this thing sort of is, I don't know, it may be setting up the idea that movies can lie to you a little, is because, you know, the first 20 minutes are Genevieve and Guy, and they're completely in love. And you immediately assume, well, this is the love story I'm supposed to be rooting for in this movie. You know, this is the story. And so then when Guy gets drafted, which is really funny that he gets, I don't, not funny, but when he gets drafted, you know, you're like, what is he getting drafted for? And they're like, the war in Algeria. You're like, really? That was that big of a deal? Like the war in Algeria? Where, you know, when we think about somebody getting drafted, we think of like World War II, some epic battle of, you know, many countries. Yeah. And he's like, really? The war in Algeria? So he gets drafted, and for whatever reason, the letters stop coming. He writes once or twice, and Genevieve, her heart breaks. I mean, she sings a line, something to the effect of, my life was all about my love for Guy, and now that that's gone, why aren't I dead? Like, she can't understand how she can even go on without Guy, but he's not communicating. He's off somewhere on the front. He sends a picture of himself in uniform, one of the few letters she gets, and meanwhile, she's worried about being paired off by the mother to this guy, Michel, Roland, played by
good question.
Mark Michel. And what's really funny about this is the character he plays, Roland Cassard, appeared in a previous movie of Jacques Demy's called Lola. Okay. So this movie is a sequel to Lola, oddly enough. He apparently in that movie, Roland tried to win the hand of Lola, and it failed. So he is alone in that movie, and then here he mentions that he's brokenhearted in this movie. So this movie is literally a sequel.
I had no idea that was the case there.
Yeah,
and he mentions Lola by name.
Yes, he does. Yeah, I've never seen Lola. So, but I mean, this movie,
fantastic.
This movie exists in they were doing Marvel Universe building way before.
So was that a musical too? Was there any?
I believe it
or
is.
Or was that straight up? Lola's a musical?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, well, now I want to check that out. Okay,
right, and there's
cool.
There's a third film in this sequence, which I think features...
It's a trilogy?
Yeah, apparently so. Now, it features different characters, but it features a lot of the same actors, and it's called The Young Girls of Rochefort from 1967. Mm. So it makes a sort of romantic trilogy, as they call it here on Wikipedia.
Interesting, okay. But I'm really intrigued.
Yeah. In fact, Gene Kelly is in Young Girls of Rochefort.
Really?
Yeah. So we're completing the circle entirely there. But
the circle is now complete.
The circle is now complete. So the mother wants to pair off Roland with Genevieve, and Genevieve doesn't want that. And Roland is not a bad guy, you know?
Yeah, no, he's not at all.
He's not a villain or anything. He just doesn't inspire the kind of passion that Guy did. But eventually Genevieve gives in and marries Roland for sort of a life of security. And then she is absent the movie at that point. And then
she really just falls off the face of the movie.
Yeah. And the guy returns. And at that point, his relationship with Genevieve is over. And he then takes up with Madeline, who is his godmother's caregiver, played by Ellen Farner, who holds a torch for Guy through this whole movie. And when after the godmother passes away, they get together. And so we then follow Guy, and he goes off with Madeline. And, you know, we're sort of like, are we supposed to be happy about this? It's hard to say, because they both say, you know, like, because Madeline doesn't seem like a bad person.
No, she's very sweet.
Yeah. And all of this comes to a head at the gas station that Guy owns. And this is a couple of years later, and he is working. He owns the gas station. It's an Esso station, and he owns it himself. And who pulls up but Genevieve in a very expensive car with her daughter, which is Guy's daughter. And they see each other in this station, and that scene is absolutely amazing, because there is so much there that they're not saying that they could be saying, because they've literally not seen each other in years. They've had no discussion about their relationship ending, and yet they seem sort of passive about the fact that they're not together anymore, or even really talk to one another about why it ended. And when Genevieve asks Guy if he wants to meet the daughter, he says no.
Yeah.
And not even in a tortured way. It's sort of like an indifferent no.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting, right?
Thing that I'm thinking of, and I was doing a lot of reading about this movie after La La Land and stuff, because I wanted to kind of live in that La La Land world a little bit. But the main theme of this movie, the main song, and I should mention the music, my God, by Michel Legrand. He wrote all the songs, so I mean, he is pretty much this as much his films as it is Demy's.
Oh, certainly.
The main theme is I will wait for you. They reprise that song during this final sequence in the gas station, except it's played in a very grand manner, like in this huge manner, like a big sweeping kind of way, which is completely at odds with the conversation these two characters are having. And the I think I read it on the AV Club when they were talking about it, and it says this, by playing the music, the song at this level, when this these two people are not having that kind of conversation, is it sort of underscoring what they're doing? Like, is it mocking it? Or is it saying that this is what they're really saying to one another without saying it? Because their conversation is amazingly bloodless, considering how much they were in love with one another, and then they stopped seeing one another, and now here they are again.
But what do you think it was?
It's a good question. I tended to think, I have to admit, I watched the movie twice, the second time after I had read that article, because I really started to want to like take that part of it in. And I sort of took it as the theme is trying to get across that these two, that the movie is sort of saying they weren't meant to be together, but life happens and that's okay. Like they are not permanently damaged because they didn't stay together. And that's the way movies can tend to lie to you, because they present you this couple and you think, well, this is the couple that I have to follow through this whole movie. And if they don't get together, then the movie's tragic. Well, it is tragic, but it may be not, because Genevieve apparently is fairly happy with Roland. She seems very well off at the very least.
Yeah, she seems like she's doing great.
Yeah. And then when Madeline shows up with their child, with their son, the last shot of them is them playing out in the snow, and they seem blissfully happy.
Yeah.
So you're sort of presented with two conflicting ideas of, I'm sort of sad they didn't get together, but these two also seem perfectly happy not being together.
Yeah. I think it's the difference between the passionate love of youth and the mature love of somebody that has lived an experienced life. And one isn't necessarily better than the other. I don't think that they're trying to say anything like that, but there's definitely a depth to the connection that I think the characters experience with the second love that comes around that they probably couldn't have ever had with the first, because it was this blissful, you know, head in the sky, you know, doing cartwheels in the street kind of love. These second relationships that come along, you know, they're sort of born out of hurt and pain a little bit to some degree. And there's just a profound depth, I think, that those relationships have. I mean, there's a line that Guy has, and at the end of the movie, my wife, Jen, said, you know, I really liked that line that Guy said when they're at like a coffee shop and they're finally kind of professing love for each other. Guy says to Madeline, all that I could really want is a good woman who I can build a life together with. He uses the word ensemble in the French there. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's something he wouldn't have seen as a crazy love struck youth. That's something that comes, I think, through wisdom and time, you know, looking at Madeline and saying, you know what, you're an excellent woman and I can build a really remarkable life with you.
Yeah, when you're younger, you have that notion of, you know, the burning passion of love is everything, and you don't necessarily, you know, have a life experience yet. I mean, obviously, whatever love they had, and we have to take it on faith that these two are meant to be together, and that's because Jacques Demy is using all the tricks of movies to tell us that, the sweeping music and the colors. All he has to do is go off to war, and the relationship withers and dies.
Right.
And that tells you, well, maybe it wasn't that strong to begin with then, if it can fade away that quickly. I do love how sort of, I don't know, like classy it is, and that they suggest, you know, their last night together before he goes ships off to war is the first night that they ever spend together sexually. And she ends up, of course, again getting pregnant from that. But it's like, it's a very, like sort of very chaste way of presenting it. But it's like, it's, you know, she has to then deal with the reality of being pregnant. And if you look at the costuming, the way that Genevieve Jacqueline Deneuve dresses, as she goes throughout the movie, as we follow her through the second act, and this movie is literally broken up into acts.
Yeah.
She starts dressing more and more like her mother.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Their outfits start getting closer together. And again,
yeah.
it's easy to demonize the mom because the mom is like, I got to marry off to somebody, you know, wealthy. But the mom is just trying to look out for her daughter.
I thought actually the mother character was nicely not one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Like, you knew that she wanted to marry the daughter off, but there was the scene where she's talking with Michelle and he's professing his love for her daughter. And she says, I really don't know anything about you mm-hmm. yet. You know, you've only been with us a little bit of time. I'm not going to just give you to my daughter
right.
without knowing any more than that. Like, but for the amount of money that she, you know, saw that he possessed, you know, she could have been a really one-dimensional mother type character and just been like, yes, here's my daughter. Go make her rich. So, yeah, I thought she was nicely sympathetic. She'd also said, too, you know, she had married. Didn't she say, like, she had married for expediency as well?
I think so,
And it didn't work out for her. So I thought she was a nice character. I really enjoyed her.
Yeah, it said everybody here is, it's only a handful of, much like La La Land, it's only this handful of characters, really, like four or five characters. I mean, you really can see a lot of the similar beats from, the setup, at least, from La La Land that you see here. And again, the colors of this movie are beautiful, and this was something that was interesting that I read about, that when Jacques Demy shot this movie, he shot it on, Eastman negative stock, which rapidly fades quickly over time and becomes unusable. And so that means that a lot of the prints of this movie over time faded to the point that they were sort of really unwatchable. But he knew that was going to happen. So I'll read this here. It says, fortunately, he had the three main yellow, cyan, and magenta color separation masters made on black and white negative film that could not fade. And so it was sometime in the 1990s, his wife, who was also a film director, Agnes Varda, got the film restored. And now the versions that you see now on Criterion or DVD are the full versions as it was meant to be seen in 1964, with all the bold colors and just the eye-popping visuals and things like that. And it really does, you know.
Wow,
that makes
a lot of foresight.
Yes, it is. And it makes Cherbourg really kind of look like it's Candyland in a lot of ways, which is, you know, a pleasure to look at.
So much color. Yeah, I really liked that about this movie. But yeah, thematically, this is definitely a contrast between the Hollywood romance and a real-life romance.
Right.
I think that's what we're looking at here.
Yeah, I mean, La La Land, it was all about, will they stay together through all this hardship? And this movie tells you pretty early on, like, oh, they've already broken up. Okay, well, they're going to get, you know. And then the final scene of them, like I said, in the gas station, the way the camera pulls back, it makes the whole movie look like it takes place in a snow globe. You know, it really has, because it looks like it's like a little fantasy that you see in a snow globe. I mean, this movie has a scene in a train station where Genevieve says goodbye to Guy as he ships off to war, and that looks like every time you've ever thought about lovers parting in a train station, this is probably where they got it from, literally. Although, of course, they probably got it from
that scene was perfect.
Actually, but I mean, it is so classically done. It's like iconic to the point of like, oh, this is what this scene is. This is exactly how it looks.
This is how these go. Exactly. Yeah. It was lovely.
What did your wife think about it overall?
I think she enjoyed it. We didn't talk too much about, like, you know, we didn't get too much into it afterwards. You know, we had stuff to do. So she kind of went her way. I went my way. But yeah, I think overall she enjoyed it. She was making comments throughout, like, oh, this isn't, they're not going to work out. Oh, he needs to be writing more letters.
he does need to be writing more letters.
Yeah, he dropped the ball. So, okay, here's something that I was interested in hearing from you, because I found there to be a lot of similarities between this movie and La La Land. For example, you know, everything's kind of broken down into acts, and the acts are broken down into, you know, we'll actually get, like, you know, in La La Land, scenes were, you know, we had spring, summer, fall.
Right.
And in this movie, it was labeled every time a new month, you know, kind of happened, was brought on screen. The colors were really similar, but they were so vibrant and saturated. And then the overall structure, even right down to having this musical theme that would haunt, you know, you kind of, with La La Land, it was da 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 da. with this one, I'm trying to remember the way the music went, but you know, it's the same song, like you said, that plays at the very end,
right,
when they're meeting up again. You know, that's exactly what happened in La La Land, and it happened in this movie too. So with so many things being similar, did that add to your experience of La La Land, or did it take away from it?
It's interesting. It didn't take away from it at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I mean, part of the reason that I wanted to talk about, I mean, I've always wanted to see Umbrellas of Cherbourg, even before La La Land ever came out. I've always wanted to see it, so this was just a great excuse to catch it. But no, it didn't take away from it at all. I appreciate the fact that Damien Chazelle wanted to make his own version of, I think it's the director Jean-Luc Godard, I believe, said the best way to comment on a film is to make another film. And so, you know, Chazelle is appropriating the stuff that he found in that movie. I mean, obviously, if it's his favorite film, it really resonates with him. And he's appropriating all that material for his own version of it. But yeah, no. I found it, I find their similarities interesting, but the two films are diverse enough that I'm like, well, that's not a remake. It's its own take on some of the same ideas and some of the same visual concepts. So no, I think they make, I would love to see them together back to back, like in a, you know,
yeah, that would be really,
that would be really cool. Especially since Umbrellas of Cherbourg is like 95 minutes. It's a brisk movie. It does not, you know, it's for you, when you tend to think of movies that are called masterpieces, you're thinking of these big epics, but this thing, you know, it's 90 minutes in and out. It's those basically three sequences and that's done. How about you? Did you feel the same way?
It took away a little bit from La La Land for me, but not by much, because I still absolutely love that movie to pieces. But I think a result that I had when I got to the end of Umbrellas is I thought, oh wow, that was La La Land really borrowed pretty heavily from this movie. So it made some of the things that felt very unique about La La Land a little less so to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, weird, I guess, you know, I don't know. I was a little bit bummed by that, but overall, not too much, because I still love that movie so much. So,
have you had a chance to see La La Land again?
No, I've really wanted to get out to.
Yeah, me too. It's playing at some IMAX theaters. They expanded it to IMAX, and I would have killed to go see it in IMAX, but there are unfortunately no IMAX theaters around here, so I'm not going to get a chance, but I would have loved to have seen it. Now, I did want to talk to you a little bit about this, because in the time since we did that episode, which was like more than a month ago, La La Land, you know, was nominated for 14 Oscars. That it's tied the record for the most amount of nominations any movie's ever gotten, with Titanic and All About Eve. It's not going to win all 14, but it's time for that. And there has definitely been a bit of a backlash. You know, I know some people on Facebook that are like, I hate this movie, you know, and you know, really, really dislike it. And yeah, I think that's inevitable, you know, when something becomes popular. Yeah. There was a sketch on Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks ago where Aziz Ansari was the host. He's taken in for questioning by two police officers, and they want to know why he didn't completely love La La Land. it's a great sequence, and he's like, I thought the middle part was a little, that's the point, and they're like getting mad at him and stuff. And it's like, well, while I love La La Land unconditionally, I was like, this is a fair sketch, like this premise is making me laugh. So
yeah,
I mean, what do you feel as though, would you want to see it win Best Picture? Do you think it should? I mean, I don't know how many of you've seen of the other movies that are nominated.
I haven't seen enough of what else has been nominated. I would be ecstatic if it won Best Picture. But yeah, I probably need to do a better job of seeing what else is up for it. Yeah, it's funny because it is such a love letter to Hollywood. So one of the things that I saw on Facebook was somebody had taken a GIF of a Simpsons episode where it's Bart Simpson and he's standing on the kitchen table and he's got like he's wearing like a kitchen pot on his head and he's got a wooden spoon and another pot in his hand and he's banging the pot and he's going, I am so great. I am so
right,
great.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
And somebody put that up on Facebook as a meme, kind of making fun of La La Land getting all these awards or being nominated for all these awards, because with the movie being such a love letter to Hollywood and those that, you know, that sacrifice all to chase the dream, you can kind of get that feeling like, oh, of course they're gonna want this movie to win. It's about them.
Right. Movies, you know, about movies tend to win Best Picture.
Yeah.
Argo or The Artist. Yeah, the recent past is littered with movies about movies.
Yeah, so that said, though, I still feel like it's a great movie, and I still would love it to see it win. I don't, just because a movie is about movies or movie stars or chasing the dream in that way, it doesn't invalidate it, I think, and shouldn't take it out of the running to be a contender for winning Best Picture or anything.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I look at these movies where if there is one central conceit, whether it's the story or the couple, whether you, if the movie doesn't get its hooks into you, then it doesn't work and you're not really that big on it. And the people who don't like this movie just didn't get into them. But I hooked into that couple very quickly. The way, yeah. You know, I have to admit, I didn't quite get in as emotionally involved with Genevieve and Guy, because their relationship is one, as you mentioned, of kind of youthful romance, and I'm an old person now, and I don't have the, you know, I've lived a life, and I've had other things happen to me, and I kind of was able to look at their relationship as, oh, this is a cute, you know, romance between kids, and we'll see what happens to them, as opposed to the slightly more hard-won romance that we have from Sebastian and Mia in La La Land.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I hooked into those two from the beginning, and I desperately cared what happened to them. And so that's why the movie worked for me. And while I can appreciate all the criticisms about the music maybe wasn't as great, or the middle section wasn't as great, it dragged a little, or they're not the greatest singers in the world, all those things, I cared deeply about these two and what would happen to them. And that's all you want to me out of a movie, is how much you care about the characters that are being presented in front of you.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. And I think that I agree with what you're saying, just with Guy and Genevieve. I didn't find their romance to be terribly compelling, but I did find the secondary romances to be much more compelling. You know, those were the hard-won romances, mm-hmm, in Umbrellas. So, yeah, I completely agree with you there.
Yeah. Well, I said the Oscars are just in a couple of weeks, so hopefully we'll get to see. And, you know, films don't exist in a vacuum. We're in a kind of dark place right now, and I think people want to reward something that's happy and upbeat, and something that's kind of an escape from the grim realities that we're all dealing with. And La La Land is that, even with its ending the way it is.
Sure.
It's telling you that you can achieve your dreams, and that's probably a message that people really do need to hear right now. So, but for Umbrellas of Cherbourg, I mean, I feel silly even saying it's a terrific movie. Of course it's a terrific movie. It's a classic. It's one of the, you know, I mean, it's like nobody needs to hear me say that. It's one of the great achievements of cinema. And I was glad to find out that it's pretty much every bit as good as people suggested that it was. I was really sort of relieved. I always feel a little weird when I hear something's a masterpiece and I watch it and I go, that's all right. I start feeling like there's something wrong with me. I'm like, okay, I didn't.
Well, sometimes, you know, sometimes there's just something was a classic of its time, mm-hmm, and you can watch it now. It's like, I don't know. I think now this is might be blasphemy for you to hear, but I didn't see Spaceballs till I was in college.
That was not the film I was expecting you to mention.
Yeah, here we are talking about these classic musicals, and I bring up Spaceballs. Mm. But I didn't see it till I was in college. And, I mean, my friends were quoting that movie left and right when I was a kid. And then, you know, here I am, and I'm sitting down to watch Spaceballs finally in college. And I get done, and I think, okay. that was funny. But, you know, I wasn't – it was just immature, silly humor that as a kid, you know – is hilarious to you. But then, you know, you get into college and or time passes, you grow up a little bit, and it's not necessarily as funny. So I don't know if that's a terribly great comparison.
It's an interesting. I'll tell you this. Look, nobody's listening to the show anymore, so it's just you and I talking. I actually don't think Spaceballs is very funny. So I'm kind of there with you. It's okay. But no, I know
some classics are classics because of when, mm-hmm, they released.
Yep.
And yeah, and what the world needed at that time. So, you know, hopefully we'll feel years from now that La La Land holds up as well as Umbrellas does.
That would be great. Cause
I would love that.
Yes, because this movie does hold up quite well. So So yeah, that's The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, everybody. Check it out.
Go see it. And when like Rob said, when La La Land comes out on video, do a back-to-back showing. I really want to do that now.
Yeah, that would be neat. It would be great to sort of compare the two and watch the just the colors alone would be sort of remarkable.
Yeah.
So, it's great stuff. So thank you so much, Luke. Thanks for coming back to talk about Umbrellas of Cherbourg. I really appreciate
sure,
it.
Sure, happy to. Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet?
I am a little bit all over the internet. I have my main website is daabcreative.com. That's D-A-A-B creative.com. I am an illustrator and a singer-songwriter. I've been putting my stuff online on Patreon as well. So if you enjoy my artwork or my music, you can support me there. And Daab Creative is my handle for Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as well.
And if you enjoy Luke's music, and I know you do, because three of our shows on the network feature themes by Luke Daab. We've got Treasury Cast, the upcoming Digest Cast, and you'll be able to hear that soon, and Saturday Morning Fever, and they are all wonderful themes. So we all know how talented Luke is in terms of being a musician and artist. So if you want to find this show, it's over on Twitter, Film and Water Pod, and you can find this and all our other great shows over on our network site, fireandwaterpodcast.com. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and until next week, c'était Enveloppe.
Hearing that I was to see a new print of Jacques Demy's The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, that I wasn't all that excited. I like the film a lot, but a restored new print? So what? Well, here's what. It's a print we never got to see because the film's distributor didn't have enough confidence in the picture and rushed it out to theaters in a much cheaper form. Now, after 32 years, we can at last see The Umbrellas of Cherbourg in all of its three-strip Technicolor-like glory, and it is magnificent. The dialogue in this film, you'll recall, is mostly sung, and the heroine, played by a luminescent 21-year-old Catherine Deneuve, works in an umbrella shop. Her boyfriend, played by Nina Castelnuovo, works in a gas station, and their courting is très gentil.
Mon amour, oh mon amour,
Geneviève, ma petite Geneviève.
Into their lives comes a third party, a wealthy young diamond dealer played by Marc Michel, who is drawn to Deneuve. Deneuve's mother thinks he's a much better prospective husband than the other boyfriend.
Voulez-vous passer demain au magasin, les parapluies de Cherbourg?
As you follow the love story, pay attention to the look of the film, to the backgrounds even. Here, as the lovers commiserate over his draft notice. The Umbrellas of Cherbourg is so terrific, it made me yearn for the return of the live-action movie musical, especially when I saw this wildly romantic scene at the railway station, a glorious farewell scene. I think Hollywood is making a mistake leaving the musical to the animated form. But while you wait for the next musical to appear, Evita isn't due for a year, please consider the reissue of Jacques Demy's The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, mature and oh-so-colorful filmmaking, and the idea of singing that dialogue to each other right when it started. Weren't you excited, Roger?
I loved the whole film, and I don't think that I really thought about it the first time I saw it the way I thought about it this time, because it has such a bittersweet ending that is about human nature and about the way things are. It doesn't just have a pat, happy ending like a lot of musicals do. It's a movie that, despite the fact that it's a color musical and beautiful and Catherine Deneuve is gorgeous, it's a serious film.
And how about the audacity of putting it in a gas station? I mean, you know, you would think that that's so dirty, unattractive. I mean, this is really a mature movie musical.
It's playing in revival theaters around the country. It will be on video after a while. Look for it.
I'd see it in a movie. This is one to see in a theater.
In a movie theater. But, of course, if you don't have one in your town playing it,
build one.